Pseudopod number 10, November 3rd, 2006. Today's story, Tarista by Joel Arnold. Welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast magazine. I'm your host, co-editor Mer Lafferty, and this week what we have for you is a good old-fashioned monster story. Response was really good from last week's story, which was Michael Montour's Counting from 10. Adam says, I love the story, but this is the first one I had to skip portions. Squeamish plus finger loss plus driving equals bad juju. Well, I can't blame you there, Adam. And Colin F. nearly got in trouble at work because he was listening and he did not see the double cross coming, so he groaned out loud at that point, getting a strange look from two other employees. Sorry about that, Colin. We're not in the business of helping our listeners lose their jobs. You know, if we knew that it just took some dismemberment to make you guys happy, we would have been chopping off heads a long time ago. We hope Halloween was a good one for you. One thing to come out of the 31st was FearNet, a horror film database. It looks pretty interesting, but I'd recommend turning the sound off before you visit because they are very, very into an audio experience. Our story this week is Tarista by Joel Arnold. Joel lives in Savage, Minnesota with his wife and two kids. His writing has appeared in over 36 venues, including Weird Tales, Gothic.net, and American Road. The story is read to us by Jason Adams, who is the host of Random Signal. So it's time to sit down, relax, and forget everything you ever learned at a college party.
Tarista by Joel Arnold. Portman lay sick in the back of the pickup, his throat like a sponge drying on hot asphalt, the crystalline glare from the stars making his skin ache. China had thrown together a bed for him, the two blankets they haggled for in San Miguel, and a small pillow she'd made in home ec over 12 years ago. The pillow was soaked through with his sweat. The drive was endless. Over 1,100 miles from Mexico City to El Paso through central Mexico, and at night the countryside was all looming shadows edged with silver. He slid in and out of consciousness. Sometimes he'd sit with the wind howling through his hair, unable to tell how far they'd gone or where they were. Sometimes it seemed as if they'd traveled 200 miles in a few minutes, while other times it seemed to take hours just to burrow through the deserted streets of some shithole town. "How are you doing back there?" China had to yell to be heard through the small window in the back of the pickup's cab. Portman sat with his back to the cab, the blankets pulled tight around him. He turned to the open window and shook his head. He saw China's eyes in the rearview mirror, wide with worry, darting between him and the endless, snaking road ahead. His mouth felt full of sand, but when he hefted the plastic water jug up to his lips and sipped, his abdomen clenched in protest. "We're making good time!" Most of China's words were swallowed by the wind and the noise of the truck's engines. "We should be in Chihuahua by morning!" Portman closed his eyes tight against the harsh starlight. He had tried averting his eyes earlier by looking down at himself, but it made him nauseous seeing his stomach, feeling it churn and recoil and writhe within. The truck hit a series of painful bumps in the road, and there was China's voice. "The chicken, or maybe the chocolate, could have been the chocolate, wasn't wrapped. That's not a good sign. That's never a good sign." Portman wondered how long she'd been talking. He had given up responding to her conversations earlier in the evening, shortly before the sun had finished stretching long shadows across the highway like dirty taffy. It took too much effort to talk, too much energy to respond. He sensed that China knew this, and felt maybe she was talking to him to keep herself awake. Sometimes he was thankful for her voice, and other times it was unbearable. He took another sip of water. It felt like a dull knife jabbing him in the guts. But he was dehydrated. He needed more. He took a deep breath, raised a jug to his lips, and poured it down his throat. When the water hit his stomach, it was like an explosion of glass. He fell to his side, gasping for air, wheezing, trying to hold the water down, the thing in his stomach. "You doing?" China was yelling again. "I said, how are you doing?" Portman felt the truck begin to slow down. He forced himself to sit up, his stomach screaming in protest. He looked through the small open window into the cab and shook his head. Even that was hard.
"No,"
he said, his vocal cords shredded.
"Keep going."
China glanced at him in the rearview mirror.
"You look like shit. Keep going."
Portman wrapped his fingers loosely around the cold metal at his side. He wished she would just keep her eyes focused on the cone of the headlights and shut up. He closed his eyes again and concentrated. constricted his wrist and triceps to lift. Keep going! His words were swallowed by the long, silver-lined throat of night as he pointed the gun at China's neck.
Hey, okay, put that down!
She peeked at him one more time in the rearview mirror, then turned her attention to the road ahead. Portman felt the truck accelerate, the vibrations of the passing road turning from a trot to a gallop. He let his arm drop to his side, his fingers too tired to unwrap themselves from the pistol's grip. They had known each other for only 2 months before embarking on their journey. Met the last month of their sophomore year in college, their passion consuming and sweaty, increasing at a feverish pitch. They wanted to see the world, expand their minds, fuck like animals. Neither of them knew much Spanish or had ever been to Mexico, but they pored over the guidebooks. They didn't want to experience Mexico from first-class resorts and restaurants. They wanted to starve a little, hurt a little. What better way to experience the world than through the crystal clarity that a little suffering can bring? Besides, most of their money was already earmarked for the last few years of school. The trip south had gone great, seeing the countryside of the central highlands, the colonial towns, the small villages in between. They ate mysterious meats from street carts, tortillas handmade by little wrinkled women squatting at the sides of roads. They drank cheap beer and tequila. They wanted to remain lucid, but a slight buzz was better than no buzz at all. Yet even after all the driving, the hours and hours of driving, they didn't really know each other. But hell, the sex was great, and it seemed to get better the hungrier they were, the dirtier. They fucked like animals. He buried himself in her, felt the primal force of her heat turn him inside out like snakes coupling, their limbs twisting about each other, shaping, reshaping. When the time came to head north again, they were worn out, almost out of money, walking the fine line of getting too much of a good thing. Neither of them said it, but both knew that when they got home, they would take a break from each other. Not break up, but cool off. They knew the dangers of flying too close to the flame. One of the last towns they stayed in was Guanajuato, about 4 hours north of Mexico City. China turned in early, but Portman wanted to drink up a little more culture. He watched China fall asleep next to him, then stepped out of their simple motel room. Only 2 blocks away, he found the tavern.
Don't you dare fucking stop!
Portman struggled to lift the gun. He didn't want to hurt her, and he hoped to God his finger didn't slip on the sweat-slick trigger, but the truck had been slowing down. He almost didn't notice it. Sleep had overcome him, dreams of vibration and the sounds of things sliding wet and slimy over the earth. But when the truck slowed, the hiss of the wind died, and it was the approach of silence that screamed at Portman. He tapped the barrel of the gun on the frame of the cab's window.
You can't stop! What's happened to you?
There was fear and exhaustion and frustration in China's voice.
I can't go on forever. I can't.
Portman sucked in a mouthful of air.
You have to,
he managed. He touched the gun's nozzle to her cheek.
Till morning.
She barely winced, but the engine roared back to life as she pressed heavily on the gas.
Good girl,
Portman whispered. He let his hand drop to his side. The hot, smoky tavern glowed with candlelight reflected off the polished wooden tables, off the mirror and liquor bottles behind the bar. He'd already had one too many shots of tequila and hadn't paid for a single one.
Here, friend, have another!
Juan slid a fresh shot across the table. He left a trail of spilled tequila in its path. Friends are easy to make when you're the only white guy in a bar full of Mexicans. A novelty.
Whoa! Portman leaned back, waving off the tequila to surrender. No fucking mas!
Juan laughed.
Come on, the last one, I promise you!
Portman exhaled a watery sigh. He wasn't sure how he'd make it back to his motel room, let alone the flight of steps that led from the tavern to the street below. They'd probably find him the next morning passed out in the Zocalo covered with vomit and bird shit.
Okay, he picked up the tiny glass. This is it.
He tilted back his head and swallowed, well past the point of feeling the burn. He decided he'd better go back to China. Juan leaned forward in his chair.
I'll help you down the steps.
I can make it.
Portman started to get up and felt a hand squeeze his shoulder. He squirmed around and saw a pockmarked face staring at Juan.
I brought the gringo a drink.
Leave him alone, Benito.
Benito's glazed eyes were crisscrossed with tiny red veins that looked like snakes hungering after his pitch-black pupils. Portman could smell the alcohol on him even over his own potent breath. Benito produced a pint-sized mason jar from a paper sack he held.
Homemade,
he said. He lifted the jar up so that the golden tavern light shined through it.
It was full of a cloudy amber liquid. I call it lichate. Juan started to get up. Leave him alone. Benito ignored him. When he tried to smile, his face twisted up into a grimace. Tequila, he said. Portman looked at Juan. Juan shook his head gravely. Portman felt Benito's fingers burrow deep into his shoulder blade.
Just a sip, Benito said.
Portman didn't want to be the cause of a fight, particularly if he was going to be in the middle of it. I think I can handle a sip. He held his hand out for the jar. Benito pulled it away from Portman's grasp.
Only if it's okay with Juan here.
Juan's eyes smoldered. Just a sip, he said finally.
A small sip.
He sat back down. Benito swirled the tequila. Something stirred in the bottom of the jar. He grinned at Portman.
Want to swallow the worm? Can't say you've been to Mexico if you haven't swallowed the worm.
Just a sip, Juan said once more.
No worm.
Portman tried to focus on the jar. The residual swirl of the tequila made the worm dance. It was a pale white, the size of Portman's index finger.
I didn't think they got so big, he said.
Benito laughed. A small crowd gathered around the table laughed. Juan did not laugh. Just for a second, as the candlelight glowed through the glass, it glowed through the body of the worm. A trick of the light, the occlusions of the tequila, perhaps, but it appeared as if a small heart beat in the middle of the worm, appeared as if the worm had a dozen tiny legs grasping helplessly at its own chest.
Just a sip, Juan warned.
Drink, the crowd began to chant in Spanish. Drink, 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 drink. Portman lifted the mason jar to his lips and took a sip. It went down like water. Not bad at all.
Drink, drink, drink.
The chant was verbal adrenaline. It gave Portman a feeling of power. It made him want to show them that even though he was a foreigner, worse, a tourist, that he could join them for a moment, become one of them. He ignored Juan's pleas to stop. He tipped his head back and relaxed the muscles of his throat. The homemade concoction rushed in, flooding his mouth, a few drops spilling out of the corners, but he got it down. And then there was the worm, bleach from the tequila. Portman looked down his nose at it as it left the glass. He saw its mouth open just before it entered his own mouth. He gagged as it slid down his throat, gagged at the feel of it grabbing at his esophagus, trying to latch on, trying to climb its way back out. Portman gritted his teeth and forced it down. The crowd cheered. Juan helped Portman back to his hotel room. Only 2 blocks away, but he never would have made it without Juan's help. Along the way, Juan whispered urgently to his ear.
On your way home, don't drive at night. You understand? Listen to me. Don't drive at night. That's when they come out.
Right, Portman had heard this many times from his friends back home.
Federales. Bandidos.
No. Juan squeezed Portman's wrist painfully so that he felt it.
Listen to me. Do not drive in the countryside at night.
Bandidos, Portman murmured. Juan let Portman drop onto the motel bed, unconscious.
I have to pee, China said. I really have to pee.
Portman couldn't look at her. He could barely wave the gun anymore.
You can't.
What do you mean I can't? What the hell do you mean I can't?
She was losing it, had lost it long ago.
I'm sorry.
Portman's breath came out in quick wheezes.
You're going to have to hold it in or just let it go.
China was already out of tears, but their trails remained thick and pink.
In my pants? You want me to go in my pants?
Portman didn't answer. China began to hyperventilate. She hunched her back, her shoulders, her face contorted into a tight knot. Then she relaxed. Her whole body relaxed, except for the tear trails that grew a darker shade of red. The stench of urine filled the truck. He dreamed of the worm, of its mouth and the tiny rictus of teeth, pointed and sharp. He dreamed of it crawling inside his belly, eating its way through his guts. And all the while, there was the vibration, the feel of the ground rumbling, of things large and lumbering, sliding wet across the earth. Portman was jolted awake as the truck bounced along the shoulder of the lonely Mexican highway. The smell of stale urine was almost gone. He struggled to sit up. His gut was on fire.
I can't stay awake.
China's voice was hoarse, defeated.
I can't do this.
You have to,
Portman said. China slammed her fist against the dashboard.
I almost drove us off a fucking cliff. I can't do this anymore. I have to get to a doctor. It's killing me. I can't stay awake.
Portman felt the truck slow down, the gravel at the side of the road popping beneath the tires. He lifted the gun up and pointed it at China.
Don't.
She stared straight ahead and ignored him. They rolled to a stop. This wasn't right. Portman had the gun. He had the gun. How could she stop?
Don't,
Portman said again, but she already had. And he knew, had known it all along, that he couldn't shoot her. He couldn't shoot anybody. He set the gun down gently next to him. He was going to have to drive. China opened the door and got out. She stood with her back to the side of the truck, leaning over, her hands on her knees, taking in deep breaths of air. After a short struggle, Portman managed to open the pickup's gate. He slid out of the truck's bed, his stomach feeling like a knife thrower's convention. When his feet touched the ground, his legs buckled, and he collapsed onto his butt. The world swam, the stars above, so many of them, all bright, glaring, dug into his eyeballs. He squeezed his eyes shut and tried to fight away the dizziness that swept over him. The cacophony of crickets was everywhere. Then stopped dead. The silence fell upon them like a plastic bag pulled down tight over the head. Portman looked up. He could hear China sniffling, could hear the sound of her joints crackling when she straightened up. She too sensed the silence, complete and desperate. Then the hum started. At first it sounded like an airplane in the distance, and Portman tried to focus on the sky, trying to see the moving lights of the airplane against the thousands of bright pinpoints already there. But the sound grew. Portman looked down at himself. It felt like his heart was beating in his abdomen. When he touched the skin of his stomach, he could feel it moving. He realized the hum was coming from inside him. China loped over to him.
Why are you making that noise?
Portman couldn't answer, his mouth too dry, his jaw too rigid. Instead, he shook his head, his eyes wide, sweat pouring from his face. When China saw his stomach move, a shape beneath the skin, she screamed. The hum intensified. The movement in Portman's stomach increased. The shape of tiny legs, at least a dozen of them, pressed at a stomach lining from inside. Then a mouth. It looked like a child pressing his face against a sheet of pale rubber. Portman couldn't look away. China grabbed his arm.
Get back in the truck, she said.
Portman shook his head. They began to hear them, a low, throbbing sound in answer, a vibration, more than one, from all directions.
I think I can drive now. China tugged frantically at Portman's arm. I know I can. I can't stand up.
The ring of tiny sharp teeth pressed against his skin. A few of the teeth poked out, then retreated, as if the worm inside him was testing the temperature of the air. Small specks of blood remained in their wake.
You have to get up.
China pulled at Portman's arm, leaning back with all of her strength. But Portman did nothing to help, his body dead weight.
You go, he said. Leave me.
They could feel the ground rumbling, as if something heavy was sliding across the earth. China let go of Portman's arm. His face was the color of bleached flour. Sweat soaked the collar of his shirt.
Go!
Portman pleaded. China turned and sprinted to the pickup's cab.
I'll send help,
she called before shutting the truck door. The engine rumbled to life. Portman felt the breath of an exhaust pipe on his back. He was unable to hold himself upright as the support of the truck squealed forward. On his back, the stars wavered in the night sky. They danced, suspended in the liquid blackness. He closed his eyes. He wanted his mother. He wanted her homemade chicken soup, wanted her to place a cool, damp washcloth across his fevered forehead. He wanted the safety of her closeness, the reassuring sound of her voice. As he felt the vibrations grow within him, emanating from the creature inside, as he felt his bones knock a rhythm into the barren dirt road, he suddenly understood what was happening. The creature inside him was frightened also, alone, and was calling out for its own mother, its own family. It began to emit a high-pitched wail, the sound piercing and urgent. Portman knew they must be close, knew the thing inside him could sense the nearness. In the distance he heard the screech of brakes, the squeal of tires over slick surface, the abrupt crunch of metal. He heard the plants and trees on each side of the road cracking beneath a tremendous weight. The pungent smell of freshly turned earth invaded his nostrils. He opened his eyes, not knowing what he'd see, only that they were already there, surrounding him. He counted five of them and wondered briefly how something so large could be so quiet. They swayed slightly, as if sniffing the air, giant replicas of the thing inside him, 8 feet high and 20 feet long. He could barely see the stars shine through their pale, moist skin as they hovered over him. It was touching, really. He understood their need, their love for the thing held captive in his guts. One of the giant creatures slowly loomed up directly over Portman, its slippery skin dripping silver mucus. It wavered back and forth as if in contemplation. Portman could feel the love it emanated, the sense of satisfaction at finding one of its own. A smile crept over Portman's pale face. It was so beautiful. An eternal love. A soft, reassuring hum rose from the creature. Portman looked up into the velvet translucence of its gaping mouth. The muted light of 1,000 stars blinked at him sleepily through the creature's skin. Everything was going to be all right. Everything was going to be all right. The creature hovered only a second longer. Once it fell upon Portman, there was nothing but darkness and pain.
For the record, this is why I drink gin. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is produced under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license. Don't sell it, don't change it. The music you hear in the background is by permission of Anders Manga at andersmanga.com. And Pseudopod consists of me, co-editor Ben Phillips, and publisher Steve Ely. We are listener-supported through the donations at our website at pseudopod.org. If you want to visit us via MySpace, our MySpace name is Pseudopodcast, and we have the same name at LiveJournal, which is pseudopodcast.livejournal.com, I believe. I know some people are into the whole friending thing, so feel free to add us. And remember, the next time you're in Mexico, please, just drink the beer.